From the Arts Internship Office, and we're here today for the How to Apply to International Internships information session. So today we're going to go through everything you need to know about applying to the Arts Internship Office presented internship opportunities, as well as anything you'd be interested in finding your own international opportunity. We're going to have a few people share their experience, and also a presentation on voluntourism. Then I'll be taking questions, and we'll have an informal session with some food afterwards so you can mingle and ask your questions to interns, former interns that were just there this summer in a position you might be interested in applying to. So let's get started by describing what an internship actually is. It's really a short-term academic or professional work placement, and it's really related to your field of study. It's supposed to give you an idea, a concrete idea, of what you've been learning in the classroom, and you can take all of that theory and knowledge and apply it to the real world. The ones that are administered through the Arts Internship Office are positions where we've been sending students for years with organizations with which we had partnerships. Our relationship with them is that we send interns every year and we vet them. That means that you'll be applying directly to our office. We kind of select people for interviews and make a short list and then send it to the organization, who then selects the interns for that summer. We'll then be taking you through different workshops to help prepare you. And these workshops are really kind of eligible for everyone that wants to participate and get ready for a summer internship abroad. So all the information about postings and deadlines is on the website. However, we'll be going through each position and more in depth about how to apply. A lot of you have seen these positions around and are already wondering about, you know, eligibility and requirements. So you definitely have to take a closer look at each position, what's required, what you're going to be doing. However, in general, the requirements and the application process is the same for the internships administered through our office. We're looking for U2 and U3 Faculty of Arts or Education students. If you're arts and science, it's fine. If you're in education, it's fine. If you're in management, however, you can't apply to our positions. And what's really important is for you to be returning. You have to be a returning student in the fall of 2015, and that's really an important requirement. We're really looking for U2 and U3. However, if you're U1 and you have a lot of experience, there's no harm in applying. We'll see what it works out, and you might be called in. So definitely consider applying if you feel ready, but that's what we're looking for, is really U2 and U3. The minimum GPA is 2.7. It's more so about it's more about the minimum than if you have a great GPA, you're going to automatically get the position. That's really not the case. And if you have certain issues that you've had, you know, personal or academic, which just explains why your GPA is slightly lower than the minimum requirement, you can definitely attach a letter to your application, and you will be able to work things out and kind of understand your position. Depending on the internship, there's other qualifications. A perfect example is one of our positions is in Mexico, and you're going to have to need a minimum intermediate level of fluency in Spanish, oral and written. So that might change. Certain requirements are going to be attached to different positions based on the work you're actually going to be doing. The application process is quite simple. This year, you have a CV and cover letter that you're going to automatically upload online. So most of the application will take place online. We're going to take a look at the form later on in the presentation. However, there's still a physical copy that you have to bring into our office of your official transcript and a photocopy of your ID. So you do most of the work preparing your CV and cover letter, upload everything online, make sure the application goes through, and then come into our office with your official documents. So let's go through a bit of what the roads to internship success are, because you're going to have to be going through different steps in order to secure something for yourself this summer. Right now, you're in the position where you're looking for opportunities. You came here tonight. That's great. You're probably looking on our website, on your own, and through Google, through your department. There's different places to look, and we're actually going to go through that when I tell you how you can find your own internship. But you're looking for opportunities, and the objective would be to kind of make a short list for yourself. A target list of places where you'd like to apply. Definitely you don't want to apply to just one place and gamble everything on that. However, I don't think it's possible to apply to 75 different internships and do that correctly. So find the number that works for you. And your objective would be to apply to these internships. For international, our deadline is November 24th. Most international deadlines fall around January. The best advice I can give you is to be really organized in your applications in order to get it done, hopefully, by the end of 2014. It's just when you start next semester, if you've sent everything out already, you're just waiting for answers, waiting to see who responds. That's a much better feeling than coming in into a new semester after Christmas and still being worried about what to do. Don't panic if you haven't done anything and it's exam time. However, if you plan it out and you're able to send it out this year, that's the best thing you can do. Afterwards, there's the notion of credit and awards and all the preparation and workshops. We're going to briefly touch upon the awards and credit, but right now, everyone in this room should really focus on applying and securing an internship for this summer. So there's a way to find your own internship opportunities. We're going to present the ones we offer. They're great to apply to, but I would suggest you also try to find your own. I myself won an award back in 2006 for an internship I found myself, and I was able to get credit. So it's really the same eligibility. There's a few resources and tips you need to know when you're looking for that opportunity. So first of all, using resources is really important. Where to look? Definitely family and friends is a great way to get an instant connection. If someone you know was in a certain region or works for a certain organization, these things seem to work out really well for a lot of interns to get positions and kind of personal connections. However, you can also use our listserv. I'll show you how to sign up to that later. We post a lot of different opportunities through email that we don't put on the website. And you can follow different organizations, their Twitter feed, RSS, just to be sure that you're there when an opportunity pops up. And definitely Google, it can be tricky. I wouldn't want anyone to write international internship, enter. That's a very bad Google search. However, if you're saying, you know, children's rights, Nairobi, that seems a bit more precise. So as you're about to Google, why don't you try to figure out what you're actually looking for, and that's kind of the first step. You want to narrow your field of interest to make sure you have a precise thing to search for. Professors and departments are a great resource as well. It doesn't need to be a professor you know personally or you've had a class with. Definitely it's great when you do have a relationship with them. However, I invite you to visit your department mental page and kind of look at different professors' research interests. If some of them fall on the region you're interested in or on the type of work you'd like to do, you can make an appointment with them during their office hours. And if you preface your visit with an email stating, "Dear Professor X, I saw that you have a research interest in this field and I'm interested in finding an internship in that this summer," if you go to their office hours, they'll be more prepared to help you. They're very friendly here at McGill, and they'll definitely give you advice. In the best case scenario, they could say, "Well, I have a research center I'm working with right now, and here are the coordinates," or "My PhD student is currently doing a project in this country. Why don't you reach out?" At worst, they might just recommend you to another professor if they can't help you. Finally, former interns are a great resource. If you visit our page and you click on awards and then recipients for the years of 2014 and 13 and maybe 2012, you can see where different award recipients have interned. Do a control F search to find a country or a program of study or a type of work that you're interested in working with, like a clientele or just human rights, and you might find interesting projects that you hadn't heard of before. What's great is that you know that they've already had an intern from McGill. They're most likely satisfied with that person's work. And if you click on internship experiences, you can read all about how they applied and what did they think of their internship, what were their tasks. So that gives you precious information. And you'll be able to email this person as well to get in touch. So that's the closest thing to "My cousin just came back from this internship." You can really be in touch. And a lot of the interns that are here today to help you, they've had help from people before, so they're really willing to answer your emails and sometimes even meet you in person. You want to find an organization that fits with your academic and professional interests, and you make that target list that I was talking about. As you're building your list, you can definitely see, oh, this is a great organization. Take a look at their annual report, their partners in funding or in projects. That can add different organizations that you can just put into your list as well. It's important to figure out and do some research to know more about the organization. When you're approaching them directly, if there's not a link that says, you know, "Work for us, contact, internship, apply here," that would be great, but we're not living in a perfect world, unfortunately, then you have to get in touch with them. And your objective is to know a little bit more about them, but find out strictly how to apply. It's not recommended to come in with a CV. "Hello, can I send you my CV?" It's more about, you know, "I'm a McGill student in this field. I see that you do work here. Would you be interested in hosting an intern this summer? Yes. Where can I apply and when?" You're just trying to figure out how to apply for each target on your list. Basically, you want to speak to people in human resources or the direct supervisors. I wouldn't send an email to the president of UNESCO, for example. However, the people that are taking in your application or that will be supervising you will definitely be the ones that are most likely to answer you and to give you the right information. And that's the objective. What I mean by plan a targeted approach is to really plan it out, okay? The execution of applying. I always give the example that if you have, you know, 8 organizations, but the first one is in Mexico, and you have to translate your CV, get a recommendation letter from a professor, then make sure your visa works. You're going to do all these steps to apply to just one place, and it might take too long. Instead, if you just figure out where and when to apply to each, you'll count, okay, I have 7 cover letters, 1 CV translation, and 2 PDF questionnaires. This weekend, I'm doing 3. Next week, during reading week, I'm doing this. So that you plan it out and actually execute it. It seems overwhelming at first, but if you start making a list, then contacting each one, and then start writing them, you'll see that the responsibilities shrink until you've actually done it. So make sure to contact them by phone or by email, and to, you know, don't give up on the first try, and be in touch with them as much as possible. Now we're about to get started with the opportunities offered through our office. These are programs where we send people every year, and they're great opportunities for you to apply directly on our website. Whatever interests you, you can definitely ask me questions after our volunteerism presentation and hopefully meet someone tonight that was just there last summer. Furthermore, you're able to apply to up to 5 internships. So write down the ones that interest you, and you have the list in front of you for you to be reminded later on. So we're going to get started with internship opportunities on the African continent. We're offering postings in Uganda, Kenya, South Africa, and Ghana. The fields of work and research are there, so they're very varied, and these are all great organizations with different focuses. The first one in Kenya is Liverpool VCT. It's in Nairobi, and it's really a research center based on HIV/AIDS and social science research. So they do field work, and they also do a lot of research on the issue, as well as education about that subject to the population. There's Elimu Green Power in Kinyaga. That's a research office, and it's really economic social science research. It's with Professor Matsu Shime, who gives the econometrics class. However, we have someone that just did this internship, so she's going to tell you a bit more about what you can do at Elimu. Annie?
Hi everyone, my name is Annie. I'm an economics and political science student here at McGill. I'm in my 3rd year, and this summer I had the opportunity to intern at Elimu Impact Evaluation Center in Kinyaga, Kenya. The NGO was actually founded by Professor Matushima, who teaches economic development here at McGill. And the purpose of the research NGO is to rigorously assess development projects to see which development projects are most cost-effective and just generally effective in alleviating poverty and increasing economic growth. And so while I was at Elimu, I was involved in a variety of research projects having to do with coffee production, health insurance and risk aversion, legal aid and property rights, and informal conflict resolution mechanisms. I also was involved in a community project with a local library that Elimu set up to thank research participants, and I worked with the librarian and school administration to set up programming for students there, and I also worked with people back at McGill to establish fundraising for the program. On the research side at Elimu, I was involved in doing qualitative and quantitative interviews, collecting primary data, doing analysis on Excel, and also just your general online internet research. That was especially for coffee production. And so my main goals going into the internship were to, one, gain experience in research, both qualitative and quantitative, and two, gain experience living in a developing country and learn about some of the challenges on the ground in terms of development. And I would say that I generally achieved both of those goals. I had the opportunity to do both of those things and do a whole lot more. And so my advice to people thinking about doing international internships is that you should definitely do it. It's a great opportunity. The Arts Internship Office is always there for you. They do a lot of things and like workshops to make sure that you feel supported and you feel prepared going in. They support you while you're at your internship, and they support you when you come back. I also had the opportunity to get funding through the Curie McDonald Internship Award, and that helped cover my travel and living expenses for the summer. So that was all really great. An internship offers you the opportunity to challenge yourself, but also pursue your interests and gain experience in the field and kind of apply what you learn in class, because a lot of what you learn in class can be very theoretical. So I'll be sticking around if you have any questions, either about international internships or about the internship specifically at LEMU. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Annie. We're now moving on to Uganda. We have a position there with the Kibali Mobile Health Clinic and Conservation Project. It's really kind of literally a mobile health clinic and a conservative project. You're in the middle of a national park, the Kibali National Park, and you're doing both environmental and health work, and they have really cool ambulances for the jungle. If not, we have Children of Bududa, which is an education and health development NGO. And to tell you more about that opportunity, we've brought an intern that interned there last summer, Mina.
Okay. Hello, everyone. My name is Mina Brahmi. I'm a U3 art student and studying international development studies. It's so nice to see all of you here. An international experience and working internationally is one of the best things that I have done in my 3 years at McGill. My internship was with the Children of Bududa program. It is based in a small village in eastern Uganda called Bududa. And it's part of a larger program called the Bududa Learning Center, where there is a vocational school for locals to learn skills such as sewing, computers, carpentry, and other things. But my program focused specifically on helping vulnerable children and orphans in the area. And so it was mostly based in social work. I worked with the social worker and I worked alongside the director to reach the neediest children in the area. And part of it, which I think was my favorite part, was going and doing house visitations. And so we would go into the village, do a little bit of field work, go and analyze the situation and see what those children needed to identify the neediest children to qualify for our program. And that was a really eye-opening experience. And as an international development student, I think it was one of the biggest learning experiences for me. I'm going to explain a little bit on how I ended up finding myself in Uganda for 2 months. So about a year ago, I was walking by the arts internship office. I'd never been there before. And I actually went in and spoke to Antoine, and he encouraged me to look online at other opportunities that students have done. So as an international development student, everyone stresses that you should definitely have some international experience. So I was definitely looking to work internationally. And I went online to the website, and it's a really great resource. Definitely check out the website. I highly encourage it. And I looked at a lot of internship opportunities that students have done in the past. And while I was scrolling through awards, I found that one of my friends had done the Children of Bududa internship. And I excitedly called her and I said, hey, can we meet up for coffee? She met up with me for coffee and explained everything. So I was able to know what to expect and how to prepare for the internship itself. And she actually helped me prepare for my interview, which was really, really helpful. So I highly encourage you to look online, look at what other McGill students have done. They've done some amazing things, like working in the UN, in the Guggenheim Museum, just crazy, crazy things. So definitely look at past experiences. And afterwards, I was able to secure an internship award, the Carol and Lloyd Darlington Arts Internship Award, and that really helped me to cover the cost of my internship. Traveling to East Africa is not cheap, just going to warn you that, but it was really helpful, and I'm really thankful for the support that I got through the internship office. So if you do end up securing an international internship, I highly encourage you to apply to the awards. They're there for McGill students, and they're a great resource. So that's a little bit from me. If you have any questions, I work at the internship office on Wednesdays, and there's 4 other students that are previous interns that work there, so we're all great resources to come speak to. And, of course, Anne and Antoine are always there for you to speak to. Yeah, that's it.
Thanks, Mina. So there's also an opportunity in South Africa with IPAC, the Indigenous Peoples of Africa Coordinating Committee, in Cape Town, and their work is really towards international politics, environmental policy, human rights, but all of that linked to Indigenous peoples' issues. It's very interesting. They work closely for policy and with international organizations, and that's a very serious and important internship that we do offer in South Africa. Well, let's move on to Ghana, where we have two different opportunities in more of a democratic development range. The Commission for Human Rights and Administrative Justice in Accra is really about democracy and governance and human rights advocacy. I'm sure many of you are aware that there's a kind of a democratic revival going on in Ghana right now, so it's very interesting to be at the crux of things with policy negotiations, and the research that they do really does help mold the democratic future of the country. And same for the Center for Democratic Development in Accra, which has a bit of more of an economics bend, however it's still public policy and governance. So anyone interested in democratic human rights and the policy aspects should definitely be interested in both of these. Now we're moving on to internship opportunities in Asia. We're offering postings this year in Hong Kong, India, Indonesia, and Vietnam. And a lot of them are based in economics and business, culture and education, community development, health, or environmental sustainability. The first position is in India, Tamil Nadu, which you'll be working with the Association for India's Development, Aid India. On our website, you can see they have two different programs, Mongoloose and the Eureka Child Program. They work in education, but to a larger degree in human rights for the Tamil Nadu region, and they do really great work. We do send more than one intern, so this is definitely one where you won't be going alone. It's interesting to consider if you're interested in visiting the region or working on these issues. Indonesia, it's the Islamic State University in Jakarta, and there's the Faculty of Social and Political Science as well as a language center. So this internship actually takes place on campus, and it's really through education. You're working with students from the country, and you can speak to a former intern who will be there afterwards so she can explain her position. Both positions are different even though they're in the same place, so take a look closely at the requirements to each. Now, in Hong Kong, we have one position, the Canadian Chamber of Commerce in Hong Kong. So the name says it, you'll be kind of representing Canadian economic interests in Hong Kong, and it is a chamber of commerce. So there's a lot of work with members, activities, as well as a lot of Excel and kind of administrative tasks. It's a great opportunity to be in Hong Kong in the middle of all the economic activity that goes there with the Canadian aspect to it, and every year students come back having gained so much. So if you're in the field of finance or economics and you're interested in Hong Kong and China, it's a very interesting position. Sapa Ocho Social Enterprise is with Professor Turner here at McGill, and it is in Vietnam. They do social and human rights development for the Sapa region community. And so it's a new project we had from last year, and you can speak to the former interns as well. It's a great opportunity to work in community development in Vietnam. Now, Latin America for this year will be offering positions in Mexico and Peru. We're basically working with EDUCA, which is the Service for an Alternative Education, located in Oaxaca in Mexico. Oaxaca has a rich tradition of community involvement, and this NGO pretty much touches all aspects of environmental protection, human rights, education, clearly. And they work with different communities to defend their rights through various actions. We had an intern who filmed a movie based on the protection of a certain river for a community over there. And there's a variety of work you can bring. So she was an English student, but she went and did development work. That means that whatever our postings are, even if they seem to be more targeted towards economics or development, you can come from another department and still be able to contribute in your way. In Peru, it's Nexos Voluntarios. They also do community development. They have two different programs, Media Luna and another program in a new community. And for them, you're going to find that it's not an internship posting similar to the other ones. You'll have to visit their website and apply directly through them. For this particular program, I mean, Peru's a great region. That's where I interned back in 2006. We'll have an information session later in January for more information on how to apply and to speak to the people that were right there this summer. So we've come to the end of our presentations about our postings. You definitely have them in front of you, and you can visit our website to complete and consult the full and complete internship posting. But it's important to go over how to apply to these. The deadline is upcoming in a bit less than a month, and you want to be applying online and in person. So you're going to be doing your online application form, which basically has information about yourself, like a student number and major minor, and you can upload a cover letter and CV to up to 5 internships you're interested in applying, the ones that are administered through our office. Basically, you're going to have to work really hard to set up a solid CV, and you make a different cover letter for each organization. Then in person, you can bring in a copy of your official transcript and a photocopy of your McGill ID. So for the official transcript on our website, there's all the steps, but it's basically through ServicePoint that you order it, and you should go pick it up. Why don't you start thinking about ordering it very soon, because it does have a delay, and you wouldn't want to be stuck close to the deadline with no official transcript in hand. Before applying, there's different things you can do to get ready. You can visit us or make an appointment. We have drop-in hours from 2 to 4:30 on Wednesdays, or you can email us to make an appointment. It's important to read the past interns' reports. That's the best source of information you can get. Someone that was right there last summer, what did they do, how did they think it went, and the advice they would give to you. And like I said, order your transcript in advance. So those are the steps you can take in order to get ready for your application and perhaps the following interview. This is what it would look like on their website when you're actually applying. So you'll be going to find an internship, then online application form, and you fill out the personal and academic information, and then upload your different cover letters and the CV for each of the five positions you're interested in. Now I'm going to have my colleague from the Internship Offices Network talk to you about other opportunities that are happening in these various countries.
Hi, everyone. I'm Laura from the Internship Offices Network. For those of you who aren't familiar with otherwise known as ION, our office is basically the governing office of all the internship offices. So we administer internships for every student across faculties. So these are some of the These are some of the countries or cities where we have internships offered this summer. So you can go to the next one. So we have this summer, we have a lot of funding for these internships, which is a great thing for this year. It's $4,000 to $6,000 if you receive an internship opportunity. So first you got to apply for an internship, you got to get the internship, and then you get the funding. If basically the stipulation is you are a returning student and it is a summer internship. What else? So basically, the internships on offer are embassy positions, positions in consulates, positions, for example, at the Clinton Foundation, which has multiple departments. So it can be of interest to people from who are interested in marketing, to students who are interested in women's studies, to ones that are interested in food security. There are multiple departments, and to check those out, you should go to the Clinton Foundation website. And we have positions in the United Nations World Food Program and the United Nations Refugee Agency in Ecuador. So to apply for these positions, first of all, go to the ION website. It's www.mcgill.ca/internships, plural. And there you'll go in the menu bar, you'll go to current ION internship opportunities, and these are all listed over there. Most of these, apart from the fellowship at the Clinton Foundation, they pretty much all require that you just submit CV and cover letter, so it's pretty straightforward. All the application deadlines are January, all ranging in January, from the beginning of January to the end of January. So check out the specific deadlines on the website, and you apply online via email to ion@mcgill.ca and in person to Leacock 307. And I'm always in Leacock 307 Monday to Friday. If you need to, you know, help with your application or you need to ask questions about the internship opportunities, and you can also email me whenever you want. So again, that's ion@mcgill.ca. And I think that's it.
Thanks, Laura. So now you've seen many of the internship opportunities. There's a variety. You can also find your own. However, you might be thinking, well, if I'm planning on going abroad, it might be expensive. I'm not sure I could afford it. That's why the Faculty of Arts Internships Awards have been put in place. It's really to support students in their academic and internship endeavors, and it's their financial bursary to support your plane ticket costs, your accommodations, and other expenses associated with the internship. To give you an idea, last year we gave out over 230,000 to over 126 award recipients. So if you make the math, pretty much anyone in this room could have a good chance of applying and getting it. You have to look at the eligibility, and we're going to have information sessions on how to apply to awards. If you come and see me, there's also all the information sheets about that. However, the main message for today, because you're still focusing on applying, you know, don't put things too ahead of themselves. However, if you do secure something, do not hesitate to apply. We'll be there to help. It's really important for all of you to consider applying to these awards. You apply centrally to the awards, and then we match which the best award for you. So you'll see a huge list of different awards on our website, but that shouldn't confuse you. You're just doing one application. So please consider applying, and the deadline for application is in March. So you'd have to have your internship secured through an official letter stating the amount of time and the dates you'll be going and the work you'll be doing before that time in March. Another question I get often is academic credit. So it is very possible for many programs in arts. Usually it's a departmental internship credit course, so Poly 499, Econ 599, and it's for 3 credits. The usual form it takes is an academic research paper that you write with a supervising professor the following semester. So you need to kind of get written approval before you start your internship and to go through each step of the application process, which is get a supervising professor, come see us at the office to fill out some forms, and then bring that to your department so they register you on Minerva. All of that needs to be done before the start date of your internship. We can help you with all those steps if you come and see us at the office once you've secured something. At which point you'll do your internship, and when you return, most likely in the fall, you'll be registered for this class where you'll be writing a research paper working alongside a professor, meeting them ever so often to have comments and criticisms about your work, and at the end of the semester, they put a grade in. Depending on your program, there might be variations to this form, so you'd have to definitely get more information with your department, but for the credit, we can definitely help you, so that's something for you not to forget as well. So we're getting towards the end of the presentation on our side. I still want you to focus on the internships we've presented today. Don't forget the deadline, November 24th. All the information is on the sheet we handed out. And it's very important for you to stay connected, to stay informed. We have a listserv as well as a Facebook and Twitter account. Facebook and Twitter are quite simple to follow, and the information is there and on our website. The listserv, all the information is there. You have to send an email to listserv@list.mcgill.ca with a blank and your email address where you wish to receive the AIO updates. It's very important to sign up to the listserv because we send out opportunities that we don't necessarily put on the website. There's reminders about all the workshops, and I found it a super helpful listserv for many opportunities even after I was done with my degree. So sign up. So that's what I meant. You're going to get upcoming events, deadlines, internship awards, reminders. And now the next steps are for you to stay connected and to consult or research internship postings. You want to research the organization, the past interns, get in touch with them as much as you can, or at least read their internship experience report on our website. And then make sure that all your application documents and official documents are ready for the deadline of November 24th. So this is an idea of the following workshops that you'll be able to attend if you're ever into our internship program or if you find something for this summer. What's really important is the awards internship information session. There's a meeting with all AIO interns so that you get to know everyone who's going with you or they'll be participating in the same country as you. The cross-cultural workshop is definitely useful for anyone going abroad into a new culture. And then the experience panel is a chance for you to speak to interns and former interns that have been to the region you're interested in going into. Success in a professional environment is a workshop for people that are going to be interning in an office setting, governmental, consulate position. If you hadn't had experience as office etiquette, then that's the workshop for you. And then there's the official McGill pre-departure session, which is mandatory for everyone and is required in case of credit, awards, and just general participation in an international internship. Moving on, we have our office hours. So we're definitely always welcoming. You can come in and make an appointment, ask a quick question, or come during drop-in. We're going to send out on the listserv special drop-in hours when it gets closer to application time, and you can also email us at any time with any of your questions. Leacock 307 on the 3rd floor, right near the McTavish stairs and Dr. Penfield stairs. And there's our phone number as well if you want to reach us, and just visit the website and keep on consulting all our resources. So that's the end of my presentation, and please hold your questions. We're going to now move on to an issue that's been more and more prevalent on campus, and that could be facing you when you're looking for opportunities. And I'm going to invite McGill Law student Jake Hayek to come and present briefly on the dangers and trappings of voluntourism.
Okay, cool. Hi, everyone. I'm Jake. Nice to meet you all, kind of, but not really. As in that we have not really met, not that it's not nice. Okay, here we go. So volunteerism and international volunteering in a nutshell. So when you're vetting organizations that you want to work with, unfortunately, there have been a fair few organizations out there that have gotten into a really, really nasty habit that doesn't benefit you or can endanger you or really doesn't benefit the people on the ground that you're trying to work with in the first place, which is arguably much more important. But real quick, background. So I'm a law student up the hill at the Faculty of Law. I'm from the U.S. I'm from Michigan. I went to the University of Wisconsin. I've volunteered at a couple places around the world, taught English in Morocco and Cambodia, and worked with an aid organization in Camden, New Jersey, and then was involved with these three organizations and was ultimately the director of the Alternative Breaks Program, which is basically sponsored international volunteering at the University of Wisconsin, and now I'm a law student. All right. So there are a lot of different ways that one can work in international development. As you see here, you've got humanitarianism, NGOs, microfinance, World Bank stuff with structural adjustment, foreign direct investment by businesses, and then just straight up volunteering, which is what we're talking about for all of you because you're not getting paid for this. So we're part of, for the most part, what's called the millennial generation. And this is a great thing because in certain regards, we're much more fortunate than the previous generations. They've built things up for us, institutions. We have a lot more resources. Thank God for the internet. But there's, when we're seeking to volunteer as, a collective, there are generally three reasons why people try and do it. So you've got getting admitted. So you want to get into a great school. You want to get into a great law school. I volunteered. It certainly helped on my resume. But to do some good is hopefully what we're looking for. Cool pictures on Facebook. Yeah, everybody likes a really nice profile picture with some kid in the developing world or something like that. But I really hope that none of you are here. When I've done previous presentations, like for the Alternative Breaks Department, I told people to just get out if that's what their goal was. But I don't have that authority right now. Anyways, so what we're trying to do is we want to make sure that when you're doing volunteering, you're looking to do some good. And we want to make sure that the organization through which you're working is also trying to do some good. And then that you're actually able to do some good once the two have connected. So with volunteerism, there's a thing called volunteerism where you've kind of got mixed and matched values that we'll talk about in a slide here. And a lot of times people are looking for what they can get out of a volunteering opportunity, which is not really the right way to look at it. While there are many great things that you do get out of a volunteering opportunity, the first and foremost thing that should be on your mind is how can I help in this situation? You have things that you have, that have been with which you are endowed because you have the fortune of going to a school like this, an institution like this, coming from your respective country and ending up here where you can provide skills somewhere around the world, somewhere potentially even within Canada. And you have this fortune, you have these abilities, you can share them with people who don't necessarily have those or have the opportunity to have access to those things. So there are a couple of examples I've got here of places where this has all gone wrong, where the doing good thing hasn't really turned out so well. First example is in Cambodia. Cambodia has just an absolutely pandemic situation of its orphanages being exploitative in a way where you show up there and you go there and they're looking to draw money from you. They're not looking for you to be able to help at all. They don't necessarily need your help. There isn't even necessarily a situation where it's an honest orphanage. Now, that's a whole other conversation, but you don't want to be taken advantage of because you have a great amount of zeal, a great amount of intelligence, you're at McGill, and a great amount of abilities to be able to provide a service somewhere around the world. Second example, Dominican Republic. So there's an organization I'm unfortunately aware of that brings in people. You go there, they say, you're going to observe a classroom, which means you end up and go and drawing with crayons with a bunch of little kids. Great experience. loads of fun, but are you doing any good? Are you really going in there and doing something that somebody who's already in that country can't do? Are you providing a service by any means? Not really so much. And then they toss you in a Land Rover Discovery and bus you around the country and say, oh, isn't this beautiful? Like, look at it, there's the Caribbean. It really doesn't do too much. Last one, you can personally be endangered. So there's an example of an unfortunate, actually it was a student organization that tried to run something and sent some people to Sierra Leone, and they had to be removed because their safety was in danger as a result of the happenings of this particular organization. You don't want to get involved in any of those sort of situations. So, next up. So when you're going to a place, of course, you want to serve, you want to give, you want to do something for them, right? But doing something for them is a state of mind they have to be really careful about, because doing something for them can sometimes have you in your mind in a giving capacity where you're looking down, and you don't want to be doing that. You want to be completely aware of the cultural issues, religious issues, economic issues, and so on and so forth, so that it's a level playing field. You just happen to have been, again, endowed with certain skills because of the fortune that you have, and you want to share those straight across with the other people with whom you're working so that they can have economic prosperity, life prosperity in general, whatever it may be. Okay, so where volunteering should be centered. Again, it's not about you. It's based on skills that you can give, and you don't want to be a tourist. Here's where another balance comes into play, and there's all sorts of balance that you have to be very, very wary of when volunteering internationally. So, giving versus taking. When you go to be a volunteer, the primary goal should be giving a skill that you are able to provide. When you go to be a tourist, you want to take generally. You want to take pictures, leave only footprints, hopefully. Or you want to do something along the lines of, I'm going to go buy all sorts of great things and bring them back to my house and decorate it, whatever the heck it is. But when you mix the word volunteering and tourism together, you get voluntourism. Duh. It's at the top of everything in this entire presentation. But that's a mix of two things that are completely contradictory. Giving versus taking. So when you go into a voluntourism situation where something is labeled as voluntourism and a portion of it is about tourism in and of itself, you're mixing things up in your mind. And you're mixing up what you're going to actually be able to accomplish. And likely that organization isn't really doing anything or providing you the opportunity to do something with the skills that you're able to provide. So, if you do it in the right way, you benefit through just experience. That's the taking. But it's not taking, it's receiving. It's mutual giving rather than them taking your money and you taking whatever you bring back to whatever country from which you're from. So again, it's that giving and taking balance that you really need to be wary of, because you don't want to end up in one of those situations like I mentioned here with the Cambodia orphanages, where it was exploitative of the volunteers, Dominican Republic, where it really wasn't volunteering, it was just kind of a tourist experience, and you've kind of just had the wool pulled over your eyes, and then you can, you know, end up with those pictures on Facebook, which is great, but that's not the goal here. The goal is doing some good. And of course, you don't want to be put in danger because you found an organization that isn't actually doing anything that's helping the world out at all, at least in that specific example. So, what we really want to concentrate on in making sure that you don't end up in a voluntourism situation where these skewed values exist is making sure that you're vetting the organization with which you'd be working in the right kind of way. So here are a bunch of factors that you want to bring into play when you're trying to decide, oh, where should I go? Oh, is this organization legitimate? Price. If it's really pricey, they're probably just looking at the bottom line and probably just trying to make a buck off of you. And I don't know about you, but I don't have a lot of money right now. So I would think that if you other college students don't have a lot of money, you probably don't want to spend like 10 grand going to one of these things. So price, watch for that. Founders and managers, look for people who are professors, people who are international development professors. A lot of tourist agencies thought, oh, let's add volun to the beginning of the word and make it voluntourism so people think that they're actually being benevolent. Generally, a tourist agency is probably not going to know anything about an international development experience and being able to connect with NGOs that are doing legitimate work on the ground. The business model. it's not bad to make a little bit of profit because the people who work and organize these things have to make some money. They have to live and survive. But again, the price. You have to vet these sort of things. Reviews, internal and external. Internal reviews, of course, they're going to look great. They're going to say, oh, this organization was great, life-changing experience. External reviews, however, they're generally going to be a lot more honest about the organization's capacity to actually provide you an experience where you can volunteer and do some good. Ease of access. So if you're trying to email people and they're not getting back to you or there are language barriers, this isn't a definite indicator by any means that it's not a good organization, but you should be wary of it because you want to make sure that your safety is provided for. You want to make sure that it's an organization that's legitimate, again. And then the last thing is with pictures and branding. So an organization that has like its cover photo of, you know, some whoever getting their face licked by a cheetah, like that's about the experience of going to hang out with cheetahs. That's not about the experience of rehabilitating animals who have been the victims of poaching incidents. We want the latter. We don't want this whole, like, this makes great pictures thing. Again, it makes great pictures, but is it actually doing anything good? And is that really good for the life of a cheetah? Okay, pictures and branding. All right. So, volunteerism. Again, the balance between the giving and the taking. That's a crucial thing. You have zeal. You have skills that you can provide. You're being provided with even more by going to this university. World class. Top 20, 10 in the world? I don't know. Pick your ranking scale. We're awesome. So what you want to do is you want to make sure that you're not finding an organization that has those mixed values. You want to make sure you're not being exploited, that no one else is being exploited, and that you're actually going to be able to do something worthwhile with your time because time is limited and your skills are valuable. So that's all I've got. These are some book recommendations, and then I welcome any questions at all. Just speak up so I can hear you. So that's it. Any questions? We good? Bueller? No? All right.
Thanks a lot, Jake.
Yeah.
So, I mean, thank you for the presentation. And like Jake said, watch out for programs where you have to pay to participate. They'll find an internship for you. Those are the ones we want you to be weary of. We'll definitely have opportunities for you to find a specific thing. Even if it's not on our website, I can help you find various specific internships. You would never have to pay to participate in something where you're volunteering and actually want to do some good. Now, it's time for the questions about the internship program itself and my presentation. So if there's any questions, you can use the microphone in front of you and just ask away. Anything about the application process or certain internship positions? Eligibility requirements? Yeah, just press the button.
So you said that you have to be a returning student to apply. So what if I'm going on exchange for fall? Do I still qualify for summer internships?
So we've had that come up, and it's been okay. Basically, if as long as you're registered at McGill, so even if you're on exchange, you're still at McGill for the following semester. We hope that people come back to participate in the annual event. However, if you're on exchange in the fall of 2015, you can still register.
Sorry, it's a similar question, but I'm actually graduating this year, and I know that I'm not returning. So obviously, I don't think I can apply for these, but is the office going to be available for providing any other internship help or aid?
Absolutely. So that's a great question. We're really here to help everyone in arts. So, you know, if you're not returning, you can't apply to the awards. You can't apply to our postings, but I can definitely help you find something great for you. And what's good about the, you know, not necessarily returning, first of all, congratulations if you're graduating, but you have more flexibility and longer term internships possible. So we can definitely help you with that. Come and see us, absolutely. No, unfortunately, the awards also need you to be returning. But there's other funding we can help you find. Yes.
Just for the EON opportunities, do those have GPA requirements that are the same as the other internships, or are there different requirements?
So for EON, it's roughly similar. However, the difference between EON and our postings is that they're all different, the ones on EON. So the application process, the requirements are different. You really have to look at each position when you're considering an EON internship. And they have awards sometimes attached to them, sometimes not, so you have to take a look. Yes, I just think it was you. I'll take you too. Yep.
Picking up on the first question, you can go to, if you go to an exchange on the fall semester, but you are taking 3 credits for one of your classes, can you still do an internship in the summer and then go on exchange in the fall? Or how does it work if you want to take the 3 credits for the class?
So that's really a specific question with the department. There's ways to register later for credit, for example, in the winter. It would be your department that would, with your advisors, see when's the best time, and as well with your professor, for you to register for that class. So I'm not at liberty to answer that. It would really be with your department. But within the, you know, within the following 2 semesters of your internship, you can sign up for the internship credit class.
Is there a language requirement only with the Mexico internship, or are there language requirements for the other ones as well?
As far as our internships are concerned, you're going to see also some local opportunities. So we have a bit of French requirements for some local ones, and we have the Spanish requirement for Mexico. If you're going to India, if you're going to Kenya, then there's no language. It definitely helps, for example, if you spoke Chinese and you went to Hong Kong, but it's not required. I think you had a question.
If we're able to find like an internship outside of the AIO like listings, are we still eligible for the awards?
Absolutely, and that's the thing I want everyone to get straight. I got credit and awards, and I found my own internship. So you're definitely eligible. What you need is something confirmed and long-term. You can't do a like 10-day festival and call it an internship. It needs to be over 150 hours for credit and 6 to 8 weeks full-time for it to be eligible for awards. So if you found something for yourself, the first thing to do is to get confirmation from them, and then bring them back to our office. I'll get you through the steps of awards and credit once you've been secured and accepted.
Okay, there we go. So if we apply with our current GPA before November 24th, and then we receive our updated GPA after our final exams for this semester are posted, are we allowed to send that in and replace what we've given you? So like update our transcript?
Absolutely, and I mean, some people have had only one semester, for example, so any issue related to GPA is definitely something that you attach as a note to your transcript as you're giving it in to me. We can meet, we can talk about it, we can see what's happening. Professors understand that as well. For awards, that stands as well, and we know to expect something maybe later. There's definitely something to be worked out, so don't let your GPA, if you have like a 2.5 or something, stop you from applying. Whatever happened, it can be at least explained to us.
I missed the workshop on the cover letter. Can I still get help from the Arts Internship Office?
Pardon? Which workshop did you miss?
The one on the cover letter.
Okay. Oh, cover letter, yeah. So basically, there's 2 things. First of all, we can help you. And there's also CAPS. They're in the Brown Building right in front of ours. They offer drop-in and workshops, and you can just bring them your CV and cover letter, and they'll review it. So that's the best. However, anytime you come and see me, I have my top 3 advice on cover letters that are pretty straightforward. So if you have something that you're thinking of applying to and you need help, you can come and see us or CAPS. So I can't be at liberty to name that. All I can say is you definitely all have a great chance. You really should apply. The best thing is to look at the number of people that we've given it to. And for any application, you're going to say, is it competitive? How many people? You should really focus on your strength of application and see what happens. But I would really encourage you, like, be confident in that application. You should be fine.
For all the positions that are listed, are they only choosing one person, or do they have are they choosing multiple people for those positions?
So that depends by position. Off the top of my head, we could send more than one person to Children of Baduda. Definitely, last year we sent 5 people to India. So it varies on the position, what the organization is doing that year, and the number and variety of applications. So you can expect to be sometimes alone or sometimes with 2 people or a group. It's really going to depend on the position. And what we're going to do is once we get closer to the deadline during the interview, we'll ask you about those dynamics when you get a better idea of how many people we're thinking of sending. And then some positions you're maybe alone in your organization, but you're in the same country or region as others from McGill. Any other questions? Yes.
Do we have an interview with the the people of the organization as well, or just with you guys?
So the general process is an interview with us, and we try to do them all before exams start. Basically, we then send them a short list, and they give us an answer. Sometimes they'll say, I'm very happy, let's take the people that you've sent us, or they'll say, I'd love to meet them, and then we organize a Skype interview. We have a special locale just for you to do that. So it depends, again, on the position.
How long does it usually take to get a response?
It's definitely, it takes different times by different organizations. We try to get it, before the start of the next semester, if possible, or if not, by the end of January max. We'll be in touch about that after your interview and via email to update all of you. So you always have to focus about just the processing the application. The following questions come kind of after you've done the interview. And once you've applied, you can come and see us for more information as well. So if there aren't any other questions, there are a group of former interns standing outside waiting to share their experience, and you can also help yourself to some food. I just want to thank you all for having come out. Don't forget to visit our website, consult our opportunities, and don't hesitate to come and see us to make an appointment. Thank you and good luck.